After the conclusion of the war, the whole experience had greatly roused friends, particularly the younger generation, to feeling that while this particular war was over, the forces at work around us, and particularly in the larger world beyond us, were working in such ways that a Second World War might almost be inevitable. The young friends of the United States got themselves together into what was called the Young Friends Movement and started to cultivate by conferences and seminars, speeches, all sorts of ways, and arousing the mind and hearts of people to the kind of testimony we ought to bear, not just in wartime, but around the clock, no matter what the particular manifestation of the issues were. So I was asked to be the secretary of the Young Friends Movement. I did this for 3 years. That brought me in touch with English, Irish, Canadian, German friends, and began to expand my own knowledge and understanding of the possibilities of this little society of friends that I had been a member of all my life. If we could only see clearly what our message was under altered circumstances and shout about it. In 1920, we got a group together to go to England for the first World Conference of Friends. That also helped a great deal to feel the strength of the worldwide movement, slender though it might be in numbers. Then I was asked to teach at Earlham College in Indiana. The department was that of biblical literature. It had been held by Albert. Albert Russell, a scholar of distinction and a friend of real distinction. I realized that he had made a big place for himself in the school, although he had become, to no small degree, a center of controversy, partly because his biblical teaching seemed to some friends in Indiana and Western Yearly Meeting to be unorthodox. I had had similar training to his and viewed the scriptures and the nature of human nature very much as he did. I knew that I might have difficulty, but I had from 1923-22 to 1929, some of the most delightful and fruitful years of my life, teaching students at Earlham College. And I should say that of all the courses I taught there, for the college was small, 350 students, one was not confined to one little niche. He could expand himself without bumping into other people's territory very much. I taught not only the Bible, Old and New Testament, but a popular course called Modern Social Problems in the Light of the Teaching of Jesus. This was an elective course, only 2 hours a week, and proved to be very popular. We finally had to have two sections of it, and I'm not sure, but three before I left Earlham. The attempt was to look some of the issues that we in our time had to face, look at them squarely, and see whether the teaching of the New Testament had validity in helping us find a way to the solution of issues that were raised. War and peace, production and distribution of the wealth of the country, immigration policy, these are just some of the issues that we raised. I still meet people whose one contact with me as a teacher was this little 2 hour a week course. And it has formed a bond lasting to this day that is very precious. But after teaching these few years, I was again interrupted. I suppose it was a wise interruption, for it led to 30 years of wonderful association with the whole of the Society of Friends as secretary of the American Friends Service Committee. Here I don't plan to tell the whole story of that experience. I've written a book called For More Than Bread, which is a kind of history of the society, of the service committee, from the time that I entered its staff in 1929 till 1952, when this story was written. And it's been written up by Rufus Jones. The first few years of its life, and then by his daughter Mary Hoxie Jones following that with her book Swords into Plowshares. But some of the things that happened during that period may be worth recording. Of course, coming in onto the scene in 1929, one found himself immersed immediately in the realities of a tragic economic depression. It was no time to indulge in retreating into the scholar's den to ruminate upon the economics of the Depression, at least for the service committee, because we were a service organization, an action group. I've sometimes thought that we might have done more good if we gave a little more attention to the scholars' comments, at least, about why this depression came and what were the ways in which such a catastrophe as this could be avoided, if possible. But anyway, hardly had we got started with the service committee when Mr. Hoover, who was then president, invited Rufus Jones and myself to have an interview with him in his office in Washington. And the proposal he had to make was that the greatest suffering in the country was, he thought, among the coal miners of West Virginia and Kentucky, to some extent also Western Pennsylvania. Would we be willing to undertake to feed children in that area, which is now called Appalachia, during this period of depression? And he then said that he would give us, as a starter, $225,000 remaining over from the American Relief Administration, of which he had been the head before he was president. Our committee, after careful consideration, decided to undertake this new job, at least a job in a new area in our own country. And with forces and with people with whom we had had very little, if any, contact. It led to some interesting and strange associations. Myron Taylor was then president of the United States Steel Company. We needed more money, and we felt that the steel companies had, out of their reserves, might justifiably be called upon to contribute, to help relieve the suffering in the coal fields. Myron Taylor proved to be a good friend. He saw that the steel company did contribute rather generously. I think it was $150,000, and opened the way to some of the other steel companies as well. The United Mine Workers were then relatively weak. They were very cooperative with us in our efforts, and one began at once to think in terms of what could be done to get the two great power groups, at least potentially powerful, to face the longer range issues, those who were the workers and those who were the operators of the coal mines. I have always felt that we probably could have gone a good deal further if we'd been wiser in finding, by common effort, in finding some solutions. But we we worked away at some things that we could see and where we could carry both groups with us, the operator and the worker in the mines.